It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. Really, really interesting results from yesterday's primaries, and that's what I want to spend time at least at the top of the show telling you about. Sandy Rios with you, and we're going to go to Steve Ducey first to talk to us about what happened with Scott Walker in Wisconsin. What happened in the Senate primaries? Let's listen.
Businessman and Marine Kevin Nicholson could not turn a huge fundraising advantage into a primary win. He just conceded a few minutes ago. They've already started to break down the stage. That means that the candidate who will face the incumbent Democrat, Tammy Baldwin, in November is going to be Leah Vukmir, who was the favorite of Paul Ryan and Scott Walker and Reince Priebus and a lot of GOP establishment-type folks here in Wisconsin. In another race, Wisconsin's Republican Governor Scott Walker did get a Democratic opponent tonight. It's the state's school superintendent, Tony Evers, who easily emerged from an 8-person Democratic field. Evers is an outspoken opponent of Walker's most famous legislation that reined in unions' collective bargaining power. And Evers also opposes a $10 billion electronics plant that Foxconn wants to build here. He accuses Walker, his soon-to-be opponent, of giving Foxconn a handout. Walker has already won 2 gubernatorial elections, and he did beat back a recall try, so Evers is going to have his hands full trying to make the 4th time a charm for Democrats in Wisconsin. Now, national Democratic leaders are also hoping to flip the seat being vacated by the retiring Speaker Paul Ryan, and they found their candidate in November is going to be Randy the Iron Stash Bryce. Bryce announced his campaign in June by offering to trade jobs with the Speaker. He said he would go to D.C. and Ryan could go and work in the mines. That obviously never happened, but Ryan's handpicked successor, Brian Stile, also won tonight. He's a former Ryan aide, and he won by a sizable margin in the first district. So now Paul Ryan said in a statement that I will do everything I can to help his fall campaign and look forward to his victory in November. About $37 million was spent on the Republican side and the Democratic side in this primary. Republicans like their chances of flipping the seat because President Trump did win here in 2016.
Well, I think that was, well, I guess that's all Peter had to say. Sandy Rios back with you. All right, so Wisconsin, let's talk about them just for a second. Interesting, you know, I told you yesterday that this is kind of a, well, it's a complex race and a complex state. Each and every one of them are, by the way. And in terms of Wisconsin, you've got Scott Walker, who is a rock rib conservative. Scott is a Scott grew up in a Christian home. His dad was a pastor. Scott was in the pro-life movement before he ever went into politics, even as a young man. He's a rock rib conservative, and yet he is supported by the Koch brothers, who are not. They're libertarians who believe in open borders. So that was interesting. And Scott Walker, by the way, just Monday night before the election, President Trump tweeted out calling Scott Walker a tremendous governor who has done incredible things for the state. So that's interesting because the Koch brothers hate Donald Trump, but he had the support, Scott Walker, of the Koch brothers and of Donald Trump. So he won. And of course, you heard that he'll go up against the state superintendent of schools, Tony Evers, who has, you recall that it was over school issues, union issues, that Scott Walker was, the recall challenge came to him because he cut back on the negotiating abilities of the labor unions, chiefly in schools. So you can see now this is shaping up to be a head-on collision between those same factions that warred against each other when Scott Walker, when they tried to recall him. The other interesting wrinkle in this was, you know, Harley Davidson is based in Milwaukee, and with all the tariffs that the president has instilled, it's affecting Harley-Davidson, and they announced this week that they plan to start manufacturing overseas at least some of their cycles in order to avoid the harsh tariffs, I think, placed on them by a European, I think it's the European Union. So that's created a real stir in Wisconsin, and so we're going to see how that plays out. Paul Ryan, of course, you heard his seat that he's vacating was won by his aide, Brian Steil, who was his handpicked candidate, which makes me wonder, you know, what's going to happen when Brian Steil gets to Washington? Will he support a Jim Jordan, or will he support, will he be an independent mind? It's just really interesting. Will Brian Steil be, will he have courage? Will he be like his his former boss, this current speaker, not actually do anything, or will he actually be different? He could be different, you know. I really don't know. And then there's a really interesting, so that's Wisconsin. There's a lot more to say about it. Oh, Leah Vuckmer, of course, was the establishment pick, but Leah was on our show probably 6 months ago, and I was impressed with her. She's got a great story. She was being challenged by, in the race was Marine Kevin Nicholson, who was supported by Senate conservatives, who is most definitely a strong conservative. Leah Vuckmer's more obligated to the establishment. There's no question about it. But she will has to beat Tammy Baldwin, the incumbent, the first lesbian to serve in the Senate. So that's all going to be very interesting. I mean, really, this is going to be an interesting race. Okay, so in Vermont, the stories are fascinating. Christine Hallquist, who was a CEO of one of the power companies, the Vermont Electric Cooperative in Vermont, the first transgender candidate to win a seat to run for governor as the Democratic candidate in Vermont. Let's hear just a few words from Christine.
I must say I'm incredibly honored to have all your support and all the things that I heard were said. You know, tonight we made history. And I'm so honored to be part of this, to be part of this historical moment, I guess. But, you know, if you look at that chart, that was all across Vermont.
Yeah.
You know, that was every small town in Vermont. Everywhere we went, people are really answering to that hope, that message.
No.
We are all great. And I think that's what people, deep down, we know we can solve these big problems.
All right, so that's Christine. That's the transgender candidate. And there are transgender candidates that were running across the United States. I don't know, there's like a handful of them. And I think Christine is the first one to win this hype in office. You know, don't be too surprised, because Vermont was really on the cutting edge of the LGBT movement a number of years ago. I remember an organization called Outright Vermont. And they sponsored, I remember them sponsoring a seminar with photos, complete with photos, for like middle school kids on how girls could remove healthy breasts if they thought they were boys. That's how extreme, and that was back in the 90s. So that, don't be surprised that a transgender candidate won in Vermont. Phil Scott is the incumbent Republican, and he maintained he'll be her opponent. His opponent, I don't know the pronoun to use. Christine sounds like a man, probably still is a man, so that's the way it goes with that. And then in Minnesota, really interesting things too, and Mike Emanuel had a great report on that, so I'll let Mike tell you that part of the story.
Despite shocking allegations from a former girlfriend the weekend before primary day, Congressman Keith Ellison cruised to victory tonight here in Minnesota. Ellison was the strongest of five Democratic candidates running for Minnesota Attorney General in terms of name ID and campaign cash, but allegations of emotional and physical abuse by his former girlfriend Karen Monahan threatened to derail his candidacy at a critical stage ahead of the primary. A short time ago, Ellison was asked several times about the abuse claims, including by Fox, and he ducked the questions.
Well, they're not true, but tonight is about the victory, so we're going to focus on that. We'll be talking about this other stuff in the next few days. We're not trying to avoid the topic. We will handle it head on.
Ellison's former girlfriend and her son claim there is video evidence of the abuse. A Minnesota political analyst says if that is the case, it could be a ticking time bomb for Ellison's political career.
The real big issue now is whether or not his ex-girlfriend really does have a video, and how does this play out in the next few weeks? Because if a video does exist, that almost certainly ends his career. But even the allegations floating out there certainly raise questions for some people about, let's say, his fitness to be AG.
The shocker of the night here in Minnesota came in the governor's race. Former Minnesota governor, a two-term governor, Tim Pawlenty, losing his bid to return to the governor's mansion, losing tonight to Republican Jeff Johnson. That race called moments ago, and it was thought that Pawlenty was going to be a heavy favorite.
All right, so that's a bit of what happened in Minnesota last night. And the Keith Ellison situation, in reading the information, I want to emphasize again, I am actually, as you know, if you listen to me much, I don't rush to believe a lot of reports about so-called sexual abuse, because I think that whole the whole thing has been perverted, and women are claiming abuse when someone just hugged them too long. And so I always have my eyebrow up and wonder. But I have to tell you, in the Ellison thing, there's a 911 report. There are two women involved. There are phone calls, and there seem allegedly it seems there at least is one video. So I do think that, you know, he did win the primary, and I think it's probably going to put him at risk. And he, of course, is the head of the DNC. He took Debbie Wasserman Schultz's place. So this is interesting, isn't it? This is going to be interesting. Also, you heard Mike talk about how Tim Pawlenty, the sitting governor, two terms, lost. It was a surprise. He lost to his county commissioner, Jim Johnson, who is my impression, and from what I've read, I don't know him personally, I'm just telling you what I have heard, that he's a strong conservative. He claims to be more conservative than Tim Pawlenty. Tim Pawlenty is known for having attacked the president. You know, he was a presidential candidate early on, and he said some, you know, he has described, even after the election, President Trump as unhinged. So, of course, people are characterizing this as a win for President Trump. We'll see about that. So Tim Pawlenty is out. Other thing, this is another story. Another candidate, former state senator now, is a candidate for Congress there. Her name is Ilhan Omar. And this is really an incredible story. I read it on PJ Media yesterday. Ilhan is a Somali born. I don't know if she was born. I think she was born in Somalia. You know, she's a naturalized citizen. Somehow she's a citizen, but she still looks like a Somali and dresses, I mean, in that fashion. Her story is that she is a bigamist. She married her brother in order for him to get citizenship while she was still married to someone else. And there's more to that story. It's a pretty fascinating story. Again, it's in PJ Media, but she won her election yesterday. It's the times in which we live. Very interesting, don't you think? So that's kind of Minnesota. In Vermont, Bernie Sanders won the Democratic primary, but he doesn't want to run as a Democrat because he's a proud socialist. You know, remember Bernie and his wife got married in Moscow when Moscow was not like the travel destination of Americans. This was during the Cold War. Bernie probably is a communist, I'm guessing. He thinks the Soviet Union is the best thing since sliced bread, loves that model. So he wants to run as an independent on the ticket. A socialist. What's the matter with the people in Vermont? Isn't that crazy? You know, and I find it interesting that the governor, who is the Republican candidate, now that will face off with the transgender candidate, is in trouble because he voted on some form of gun control. So the citizens of Vermont are all about their guns, but they don't care about any of the boundaries in terms of sexual mores. They don't care about that, and they don't care that Bernie Sanders is a socialist. I guess, you know, I think maybe because so many people do live off the hand of government that they don't understand, they've forgotten about the whole ethic of working hard and getting ahead. We'll have to do a whole open line on that at some point. I want to tell you what, one other race, as you hear that music playing, in Kansas, Chris Kobach has prevailed over Jeff Collier. That was a runoff, a recount. And he only won by 345 votes, but Chris is a really firebrand conservative. He is a rock-solid fighter. But you can bet that the long knives will be out for him as he goes into the general election. So that should be very interesting, too. So that's kind of, sort of, a bit of what happened yesterday in the primaries. More are coming up next week, and the next week after that, Arizona and Florida. So stay tuned and pay attention. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit AFA.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here, through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
It's really hard to overstate how much Democrats and Hollywood and the mainstream media hate President Trump's supporters, preening about in their Ivy League towers, reading leather-bound copies of Vanity Fair, sipping apple teenies, and casting dispersions on working-class Americans. President Obama referred to us as bitter, clinging to guns and religion. Hillary Clinton called us homophobic bigots, irredeemable deplorables. And the latest critique comes from Politico reporter Mark Caputo. He referred to Trump supporters in Tampa, Florida, as toothless garbage people. Mr. Caputo later apologized for his remarks. Whatever. They really do despise us. They hate our politics and our patriotism and our God. But most of all, they hate us because we rejected the anointed one, robed in a regal pantsuit. And instead, we elected a man who promised to make America great again and delivered on the promise. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The FBI released a statement about their decision to fire FBI agent Peter Strzok after a disciplinary board recommended a 60-day suspension and a demotion. That statement reads in part, quote, "The deputy director is a senior career FBI official, has the delegated authority to review and modify any disciplinary findings and or penalty as deemed necessary in the best interest of the FBI." In a series of tweets today, the president branded Strzok and the Russia investigation he started as a fraud. In a separate development, a GoFundMe page for Agent Strzok has raised over $300,000 in a single day.
All right, that was Catherine Herridge. You know that. Sandy Rios back with you. That's a big story that took place this week. We only had time to just mention it yesterday, but I wanted us to kind of sit on it a little bit because this has implications in many, many ways. We talked yesterday about it being perhaps a turning point for the beginning of really accountability in many of these agencies. By the way, on Friday, we'll be talking to intelligence specialist who's going to talk to us about what it would take to revamp all of the intelligence agencies It would be hard, but how it could actually be done and sort of the history of them and how they developed. So I think you'll find that interesting. I want to take us back in time for a second before I introduce my guest, because Peter Strzok, of course, was the special agent in charge of he was deputy assistant for counterintelligence. That's the FBI. That was a very important role, as you can imagine. Given the FBI's role in fighting terrorism here at home, it was a very different thing that they took on after 9/11 than what they had been traditionally tasked to do, which was crime in the homeland. And so this was a very important role that Peter Strzok played, and we all got to know him when the Inspector General released text of him with an FBI attorney named Lisa Page, who was working for Andrew McCabe, who we knew was already a bad actor at the FBI, and we were shocked to see the interchange between Peter Strzok and his lover, Lisa Page, and the animus and hatred they had for Trump and for the people that voted for President Trump. And ironically, of course, Peter Strzok was then assigned, or had been assigned, he was the one in charge of investigating Mrs. Clinton's email server, the way that was handled. We found out later that Peter was the one that changed the wording on James Comey's public statement about whether not to bring charges against Mrs. Clinton. We found out that Peter Strzok was the attorney, the FBI agent that interviewed Michael Flynn, and Michael Flynn subsequently pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. And at the same time, James Comey publicly said the FBI didn't think he had lied under oath. You see how murky and messy this gets. But I want to sort of remind you in a more vivid way. The Washington Post did an article just yesterday, and in that article they included a clip of some of the moments of Peter Strzok testifying before the House Judiciary Committee. And I just want you to hear how this went down, and then we're going to talk with a special guest about what this all means. Let's listen to Peter Strzok before the House Committee.
I testify today with significant regret, recognizing that my texts have created confusion and caused pain for people I love. Not once in my 26 years of defending our nation did my personal opinions impact any official action I took.
Between July 31st and August 8th, how many interviews did you conduct related to the alleged collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign?
Congressman, as you know, counsel for the FBI, based on the special counsel's equities, has instructed me not to answer questions about the ongoing investigation.
I'm asking for a number.
Russian attempts to interfere.
You are under subpoena and are required to answer the question. Are you objecting to the question? If so, please state your objection.
Mr. Chairman, I object.
I do not believe I am here under subpoena. I believe I am here voluntarily.
Chairman.
Will you answer the committee's question as directed, or do you refuse to answer the committee's question?
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn.
Second.
You're not recognized for that purpose, and you will be subject to recall to allow the committee to consider proceeding with a contempt citation.
Your testimony is Bob Mueller did not kick you off because of the content of your text. He kicked you off because of some appearance that he was worried about.
Sure. I'm stating to you it is not my understanding that he kicked me off because of any bias, that it was done based on the appearance. If you want to represent what you said accurately, I'm happy to answer that question, but I don't appreciate what was originally said being changed.
I don't give a what you appreciate, Agent Strzok. I don't appreciate having an FBI agent with an unprecedented level of animus working on two major investigations during 2016.
To suggest somehow that we can parse down the words of shorthand textual conversations like there's some contract for a car is simply not consistent with my or most people's use of text messaging. I can assure you, Mr. Chairman, at no time in any of these texts did those personal beliefs ever enter into the realm of any action I took. And the proposition that that is going on, that it might occur anywhere in the FBI, deeply corrodes what the FBI is in American society, the effectiveness of their mission, and it is deeply destructive.
All right, so that was a montage, of course. That was not a solid exchange, but I wanted you to be reminded of his appearance before the House Committee. Well, I've asked someone today that I know well, and you will too when you hear his voice, my husband, Bruce. I've asked him to join us. Bruce served with the FBI for 24 years as a supervisory special agent. He served in many different capacities. He worked with bank robberies and street gangs. He was a polygrapher. He was an attorney for assigned after 9/11 to account to terrorism himself. He worked in disciplining FBI agents. He had a very broad and lengthy career and knows a lot about this particular subject. So, Bruce, thanks for joining us, first of all.
Thank you for having me.
From your perspective, the headline at the Washington Post, you can see it right here, Bruce, it says, FBI agent Peter Strzok fired over anti-Trump texts. Now, that's the way it's been characterized. From your perspective, what code of conduct did Peter Strzok break? I mean, do you think he was fired over his anti-Trump texts?
No, I believe that headline is a complete mischaracterization and done for political purposes, because Peter Strzok has been a good foil for the left to try to shield what's been going on in the FBI. I can guarantee you that Mr. Strzok was fired for having what we call lack of candor. Candor is a term we use for, are you being truthful? And if you think about law enforcement, what is more important than that someone working as a law enforcement agent is truthful? They have the right to seize your property, the right to search your property, the right to take your freedoms, the right to arrest you. Well, not many people have that kind of power, and we don't want someone having that kind of power who is not truthful, because any of those things that are a result of those powers are based on the law enforcement person providing testimony or evidence. And if we can't be confident that they're telling the truth, then the whole system breaks down.
Well, of course, in that hearing on Capitol Hill, he would probably say, remember, he said, actually, I have never, ever, ever been dishonest. Remember, he said that?
Yes.
He said that in response to Louie Gohmert accusing him. He basically said, Congressman Gohmert said something about, you lied to your wife. You know, is that the same look of defiance and pride that you gave to your wife when you were lying to her about your lover, Lisa Page? And then he got angry and he said, I have never, never lied. So do you think that he lied during that hearing, Bruce? Do we know of any particular thing that he said? It's a long hearing, so I don't know if you recall.
Absolutely. I mean, let's just go to when he was trying to explain what he called the context of his text messages between he and Lisa Page. I mean, those explanations of I don't have any animus against President Trump that carries over into the investigation, but yet he's saying, I can smell the Trump voters down here in Central Virginia. He's unfit for office. We have an insurance policy. Those are things that when he says, I had no, none of that affected my or created a bias for me against President Trump when it came to the investigation, that just anyone with half a brain knows that is a lie.
Could we just say it didn't pass the smell test?
It didn't pass
the Trump supporter smell
That's
test.
Right. You know, and actually when I watched Strzok's testimony that day in front of the Judicial Committee at length, and when it was finished, I was absolutely flabbergasted. But then I thought, you know what? I'm probably being hard on this guy because, again, I've worked discipline and it's my organization, my former organization, and maybe I have too much skin in the game. But then when I talked to other people who had no connection to this at all, they were all of the same opinion that this guy is a liar. And we can't ruin people just over people's opinions that someone is a liar. But I think it's very easy to prove that this man, Peter Strzok, was lying throughout that hearing.
All right, let's talk about a different instance when you believe he was lying, because Bruce, people will maybe recall that one of your jobs in D.C. was to represent the FISA application to the FISA court. And that's a very small, everybody knows about it now. It's a very small exclusive club. Hardly anybody goes in there. And you were charged with doing that and getting the FBI director's signature or the attorney general's and then going in and presenting it to the judge. So you know a little bit about this, and you believe that Peter Strzok, in that regard, demonstrated lack of candor. Explain.
And this was probably the most egregious thing that I saw out of Strzok's behavior is the FISA court is where we go to get search warrants, primarily for counterintelligence investigations, terrorism investigations, incredibly important things, and that have international ramifications. I mean, if you're talking about getting a search warrant to listen into the conversation of diplomats from another country or people that are working for them, that's very sensitive. Now, the judges that sit in that court rely upon the veracity or the truthfulness of the people that are presenting them with the evidence. Now, when we prepare an application for a search warrant or for overhears at the FBI or whatever agency is going before the court, those applications were given the highest level of scrutiny of anything we ever did in the FBI. They had to be signed off by layer upon layer of management, including the director of the FBI and the attorney general of the United States. And when I remember going in front of these judges in the FISA court and basically them telling us, you know, we really rely on your truthfulness and the standard of truthfulness that we think that you represent. We don't sit here and pick these applications apart. If you're giving us enough evidence, we believe you. And then they'll grant the warrant. And I remember warrants that were all set to be prepared. They were hundreds of pages long, maybe the application, but there was one little fact that we were not 100% sure about, and it could have been something minor. I think I've told you before, we had one where a car was involved in driving past a place that might have been carrying someone that we were interested in. And someone said, well, do we know the color of the car? And we didn't. And they said, well, let's not put the application up until we absolutely know the color of the car. Now, would the judge have cared about that? Absolutely not. But because we wanted to be so careful and because we wanted to be so accurate, that became an issue, and we didn't submit the application until we verified that information.
All right, so that brings us to Peter Strzok. Peter Strzok goes before the FISA court, and by what measure did he fall short?
Oh, it's almost immeasurable. They were using what we call a confidential human source. That's basically an informant that was providing information on this dossier, Christopher Steele and other people, that had been discredited. And you never use a discredited person's testimony to base a warrant on it. In other words, if you know somebody's a liar and they've lied to you in the past, you don't now say, well, you know what, they're probably telling us the truth now. That's good enough. We'll go ahead and get the warrant. You look for another avenue to prove whatever you're trying to express in that warrant. They knew about that. They also, as an FBI agent, when we talk about candor, it's not just what you say. It's also if you leave out things that you know, if you said it, it would change the situation. So basically, it's lying by deception. In other words, you're leaving it up.
By omission.
Mm-hmm. It's an omission of the truth,
yeah.
Which is just the same as saying a lie. And in these applications, Peter Strzok, who had hands-on information, hands-on control of this process, knew they were not including information that had the judges known that, say, the dossier had been paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, that it was prepared by people that were being paid for their, basically, to lie. It's okay to pay someone to work for you, but when you know they're lying, you're paying them to lie. And that was the basis of this application to the FISA court.
And he didn't bother to tell them.
And he didn't
Lack
bother
of
to
candor.
Tell them. Now, you talk about long-term impact on the FBI. Think of that. The next time that judge sees somebody from the FBI, you think he's going to trust them?
Right, exactly. And let's talk about that in a second. But, Bruce, as you know, Peter Strzok went before the disciplinary board of the FBI, and they gave him a 90-day suspension, 60-day suspension, which was reversed by the deputy FBI director. Now, that's interesting, and I want us to talk about that when we return. My guest is my husband, Bruce, and we'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Then Elisha prayed and said, O Lord, please open his eyes that he may see. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. One morning, Elisha's young servant went out first thing and saw the Syrian army surrounding Elisha's hometown. The servant was racked with fear and cried out to Elisha, What will we do? Elisha said, Don't be afraid. There are more with us than are with them. Then Elisha prayed, Lord, open this young man's eyes. The servant then saw the mountain full of horses and chariots of fire. As opposition mounts in our lives, fear not. The Lord who is in us and with us is greater than the hostility present in the world.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. If a single issue delineates the chasm between the worldview of our two major political parties, socialism may be it. Socialism is a rabidly non-conservative view of public policy. It depends on an ever bigger and more powerful government, which involuntarily transfers wealth from those who have to those who don't. Capitalism prefers a smaller government, which transfers responsibility from government to the individual citizen. It depends upon self-reliance rather than welfare dependency. Capitalists believe in the transfer of wealth just like socialists do, only they believe in individuals giving generously and willingly out of their own resources. It's no surprise that 57% of Democrats view socialism positively, while just 16% of Republicans do. Never forget, the bigger the government, the smaller the citizen.
Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I had a lot of credit card debt, and I couldn't pay my bills. I was feeling so bad. I got to a point where I needed some help. So I reached out and contacted Trinity.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813 to talk to a certified counselor.
They were able to take all of my different payments and put them all together.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
And they were actually able to work with my creditors. I've been able to pay off close to $15,000 in the last 18 months.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, President Trump signed into law the new National Defense Authorization Act. Among its many provisions were several that underscore a sea change in U.S. security policy. Evidently, there is an emerging bipartisan consensus that communist China is a hostile power that must be countered in every battle space. The bill focuses on assisting Taiwan, which is facing intensifying threats from the mainland, challenging China's massive military buildup in the South China Sea and other strategic choke points, thwarting Beijing's economic and information warfare, influence operations, and espionage inside this country, and contending with Chinese efforts to dominate cyber and outer space. Congress also declares that, quote, long-term strategic competition with China is a principal priority for the United States to protect and strengthen national security, unquote. Amen. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'm going to just go to a date and then ask you to read your own words. March 4th, 2016.
You want me to read this?
Yes, please.
Yes, sir. OMG, he's an idiot.
October 20th, 2016.
I can't pull away. What the, and I defer to the chairman whether
you can
or not
just use
like
one letter if you don't mind.
Why the F? What the F happened to our country, Lise?
Okay, read it again that way.
Sir, did you not? Was
yep,
not
I just
intelligible?
Want to hear it
you
one
just
more
want
time.
To hear it for yep. me to repeat it.
Please.
Okay, sir. Sure. Happy to indulge you.
You have come in here and said, I have no bias. And you do it with a straight face. And I watched you in the private testimony you gave. And I told some of the other guys, he is really good. He's lying. He knows. We know he's lying. and he could probably pass a polygraph.
Point.
It's amazing.
Mr. Chairman.
No, this is my
Mr. Chairman,
time,
I'm sorry.
And it needs
point
to be
of order.
Paused.
This point of order.
Yeah, gentlemen,
it's my this, time.
That's a disgrace.
Gentlemen from Rhode Island will suspend.
Him. No, the disgrace
Mr.
is what this man has done.
The gentleman
to our
from Texas will suspend for a
there
moment.
There is the disgrace. And it won't be recaptured anytime soon because of the damage you've done to the justice system. And I've talked to FBI agents around the country. You've embarrassed them. You've embarrassed yourself. And I can't help but wonder, when I see you looking there with a little smirk, how many times did you look so innocent into your wife's eye and lie to her about Lisa?
Mr.
Hayden?
Chairman, this is outrageous.
The credibility of a witness
shame
is always
on you,
an
Chairman.
Issue.
Mr.
You
Chairman, please. There's
have you Mr. Known. Chairman, this is intolerable harassment of the witness.
What is wrong with that? You need your medication.
I have always told the truth. The fact that you would accuse me otherwise, the fact that you would question whether or not that was the sort of look I would engage with in a family member who I have acknowledged hurting goes more to a discussion about your character and what you stand for and what is going inside you.
It's to your credibility, and
while
you lost your credibility.
Both individuals
have lost your credibility.
While
that's
I doubt
the problem.
It plays well
gentlemen
to
from
America,
Texas will
I'm not sure
will,
it plays
the
well.
Gentleman from Texas will suspend.
This hearing is a kangaroo court. It is a three-ring
all right,
circuit.
It goes on and on, but I wanted you to hear that part. That's Peter Strzok appearing before the House Judiciary Committee, and it was quite a hearing. I wish all of you had seen it. Some people complained about it. I actually think that's the way, look, we don't like to have these kinds of things to contend with, but when there's a serious problem, sparks should fly. People should care enough to argue. That's actually healthy. It's when people, the gentleman from such and such, when you're dealing with such a dreadful topic, when they show no passion and they do nothing, that's what we don't want. And that's what happens too often in the houses of Washington, D.C. Bruce is my guest. Bruce is my husband, former FBI agent. And Bruce, I want to ask you, you heard a couple of things about what Congressman Gohmert did there. First of all, was he right to bring up Peter Strzok's legendary unfaithfulness with his FBI attorney? Does that go to his credibility? And would you do that in court of law?
Absolutely, it goes to his credibility because his misleading of his wife was a part of what was going on in the investigation. In other words, other people that were involved in this affair were actually working on the investigation also. So it goes to what was the atmosphere? What was the type of investigation that was being conducted? And, you know, it's a typical man. In my mind, he's showing off for his girlfriend. He's trying to impress her. The problem becomes, though, you're not impressing her about something minor. You're trying to impress her with, I'm trying to change the entire outcome of an election. And I don't mean to overstate this, but when you look at his text, he's like, we've got to have an insurance policy. We've got to stop him. He's unfit for duty or for the presidency. Those go to his credibility. And when he says he had no bias in the way he conducted that investigation, I think all you need to do is look at those texts and look at the context of the situation he was operating in. And it shows what kind of liar he is. And I think Congressman Gohmert was absolutely correct in going there, because that goes to this man just had stated, I've never lied to anyone. And then he says, then he admits, well, I lied to my wife. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. All right. So, Bruce, as we know, Peter Strzok was given by the alleged independent body that adjudicates what happens to FBI agents. They adjudicated and they decided he would have 60 days suspension, and then he would have signed an agreement that says last chance, they call it.
Yeah, and he was to be demoted, in a 60-day suspension and what they call last chance, where if you have any other problem, you'll be terminated.
Okay, so then the deputy director intervened and said, no way, and he was fired. And I'm going to get to part B in a second. But first of all, I want to ask you that first part. Is that Is that the way FBI agents are disciplined over such a thing, as lack of candor in such a so important a situation?
Absolutely not. See, this is where I think the politics probably came into play on this. Under the guidelines of the FBI discipline committee, if you lie under oath about anything, there is no alternative other than you are terminated. It can be on a voucher. You know, did you dummy up this receipt on the voucher? If they lie about it, you're fired. There's very few ways actually to be terminated. It's amazing. There's very few ways to be terminated in the FBI, either stealing, committing espionage, using drugs, or lying. Now, that's pretty basic. And so when a man starts doing what Peter Strzok was, you say, you know what, he's lying. And that's one of the four or five conditions that will get you fired.
So you think it's not normal that he only got 60 days?
Absolutely not. I mean, this was a total slap on the wrist compared to what I've seen other people get for lying about what I would call a minor matter. And see, that's where you have to be careful. You cannot get into, well, that's only a little lie, so we'll let it go, versus that's a big lie, so we'll fire you over it. That's why the standard is what a lot of people would call very draconian. If you lie about anything under oath, you are fired. And he was lying under oath in many instances here, both on the, what we've already talked about, the FISA applications before Congress, in documents I'm sure they prepared. I think in the Michael Flynn case, if you notice, you know, Michael Flynn, months ago, entered his plea of guilty to lying to the FBI, which was an interview that was conducted by Peter Strzok. But if you notice, the court has not adjudicated his sentence yet. And I think the reason they haven't is because there's serious questions as to whether or not Peter Strzok lied about what General Flynn told him that day in that interview. And I think if Mueller, leading the special investigation, was confident that Strzok was a truthful person, they would have gone forward with this sentencing of Michael Flynn. I find it very illustrative of what was going on with Peter Strzok that General Flynn has still not been sentenced.
Bruce, back to Peter Strzok's fate. Aiton Goldman is his attorney, and he said that FBI Deputy Director David Bowditch, who stepped in to order the firing on Friday, let me go back to the text. This is from the Washington Post. Even though the director of the FBI office that usually handles employee discipline had decided that Strzok 48 should face only a demotion of a 60-day and a 60-day suspension, Goldman said the move undercuts the FBI's repeated assurances that Strzok would be afforded the normal disciplinary process. This isn't the normal process in any way more than name. This decision should be deeply troubling to all Americans. What would be your response to that?
I would say that's absolutely wrong, what that attorney said. Anytime, especially, you have to understand that Peter Strzok falls under what they call a senior executive service. Those are the highest people within federal agencies. They are subject to a different form of discipline than us people who were, I would call, the grunts. But regardless of that, and there's always been a lot of problems in that the reputation in the FBI is that the people who were higher up were always treated with much more kid glove treatment than the people down below. If you do the same thing, but you were a senior person versus a grunt, the senior person would get a slap on the wrist and the grunt would really get hammered. And regardless of that, though, anytime someone is to be fired, regardless of who it is, but especially in SES, it goes up for review above the Department of Office of Professional Responsibility, or OPR. OPR is basically internal affairs for the FBI, and they make a recommendation as to what should happen to someone based upon their findings. And then anytime someone's to be terminated, it goes up to the deputy director, who is the number two person in the FBI. And it is not at all unusual. It's rare that they will get involved, and I think that actually speaks volumes about Peter Strzok being fired, because rarely will the deputy director reverse the finding or the recommendation of the head of OPR. He must have really been flabbergasted that only a suspension and a demotion was being recommended. I can guarantee you he did not take this action lightly, and he did not do this for political purposes, because I think actually he probably did this despite Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, despite what he wanted to be done, because all I've seen Wray do is run smoke and interference for people like Strzok since he was appointed the director. I'm actually very disappointed in him. I think he should have gone in there and cleaned up things, and instead he knows Comey, he knows Mueller. They've all worked together. They worked together on the Enron investigation. These guys are all friends. Christopher Wray, in my opinion, was a terrible pick for director.
We only have a couple of minutes left, Bruce. You heard that Congressman Gohmert made a comment to Peter Strzok that he'd talked to agents and former agents, and their morale was so low that Strzok had done so much. Strzok and the others, not just Strzok, but Comey, and he didn't add that, but I'm adding that Andrew McCabe and others had done so much damage to the morale and reputation. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think you're even seeing it play out in cases. Down in Orlando, the wife of the shooter down there was tried for whether or not she assisted her husband or had foreknowledge. And an FBI agent testified that she admitted to him that she knew about this shooting beforehand. The jury found her not guilty. And when they spoke to the jurors afterwards, they said, well, you know, really that FBI agent should have recorded that statement by the shooter's wife. Well, I can tell you that when I was in the FBI, we had a policy. We did not record things. And it was because we had developed the reputation that we did not lie. Now, you know, you can call it a coincidence. I don't. I find the timing of that verdict and the reason to be very much in line with what we're seeing people observing about the FBI, that our upper management was lying and was covering for people.
And so what you're saying is that the effect that people would not think about that you're pointing out is that FBI agents have lost their cachet,
yes.
At least for right now, that whereas once they were trying, look, I heard Andy McCarthy talk about how trusted the FBI was when he used to work with them.
And I don't mean that as in any way denigrating the people that are doing the work of the FBI.
You're not saying that agent in Orlando was lying. You're not inferring that. You're saying they didn't believe him because of what these guys have done.
I'm not saying that at all, that he was untruthful. What I'm saying is the damage that's been done from the head down to the FBI is incalculable. I just, people will say, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just those three or four people. That is a mischaracterization of things. The people in charge represent the organization and what it's all about. And when you see people behaving like that at the top, the inference drawn by a lot of people is that, well, it must be the entire organization.
Do you think in some ways that, you can hear the music, that the firings of these, Lisa Page is gone, Peter Strzok is fired, Andrew McCabe is fired, Comey was fired. Do you think this is the beginning of healing, Bruce?
I certainly hope so. It sounds like we're getting there. What I pray, though, is that these hearings continue, that the midterms provide us a way to continue these investigations and wrap this up.
Yeah, okay. That was my husband, Bruce, FBI agent, proudly serving his country, and he's like many of them who are just grieved over what they've seen happen to their agency. And all we can hope for is that things will get cleaned up. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.